Good evening, morning, afternoon. How do? How are we getting on? It is episode 30 of the Alcohol Uncensored podcast. You know what we do? We bang on religiously about the benefits of not drinking. And yeah, we do it well, I think. Well, we're getting better anyway. I'm Ian. I am 6 years alcohol free and I live in the northeast of England. And I'm joined by my co-host with the co-most, Kelly, who's looking like the ultra-professional podcast host tonight because she's got her hair all fancy and she's got herself some new kit. How are you getting on, Kelly?
Yeah, good. Hair all fancy. I'll need to go to the gym more often. I've got to say, this is a mic that Anna, one of our community members, sent me. She kindly sent me because she was editing the podcast and she said my sound was rubbish. And I kept putting it off and I kept putting it off because I feel like a bloody idiot with this mic. But I've been editing it myself the past few weeks because Anna's been on holiday and the sound is terrible. So I really feel bad that I've not tried to use it sooner. So I've dug out the mic and
I'm working the part. You're making me look bad with me with my shame and Kylie Minogue little sort of 25 quid little headset on. Yeah, and our guest's got his fancy headset on as well. So I'm definitely the poor relation.
Mine's 15 quid, I think. So
you are, well, okay, looks better than mine. So Kelly, how's your week been? All right?
It's been really good. Yeah, it's been really good. At the weekend, I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous convention, which was amazing. It was just full of wise, kind, caring people sharing their kind of experience and their hope and their strength, and it was really, really good. So I've been kind of buzzing off that this week. Started back the gym, and I'm 325 days sober. So life has been good this week, yeah. What about you? How's your week been? Are you feeling less tired?
I'm getting there. Yeah, I am picking up. Although I just had a bit of a nana nap or a dad nap before I did this call because I thought I'm going to need to perk myself up with. And I woke myself up snoring. You know when you do that? When you sort of just go for a sort of cheeky little nap and it's one of those naps that doesn't really go to sleep and I could hear myself.
Ladies don't snore, Ladies don't snore.
You wonder what I'm talking about then. But yes, apart from that, I'm doing all right. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm good. Let's not waste any more time. Let's get chatting to our guests because I'm really looking forward to, as we always do, we always say that, really looking forward to, but I genuinely think we're going to have a good chat today with another member of the Alcohol Uncensored community. How many is there? Bloody hell, we're trotting them out all the time, aren't we? Niall Davison, who is from County Down and is 3 years alcohol free, and we've obviously known Niall, Kelly and I for quite a long time now, and we've been keen to get him on, and here we are, we've got him on. So Niall, how are you getting on, mate?
Yeah, really good, Ian. Kelly, thanks for the invite, it's much appreciated.
It's quite all right. We've been keen to have this chat for a while, and it's fallen right obviously that we can do it now, so no, please, you can join us. Niall, you know what we do, because obviously we chat about the sort of, obviously, yeah, I know you listen to the podcasts and what have you. So we tend to sort of go back and talk about your drinking history, if you know what I mean, sort of where it started, where it sort of, how it developed, when it started going wrong, how you sort of changed things for you. And I think with you, I think we want to talk quite a lot about sort of afterwards, because I know from talking to you personally and from listening to some other podcasts that you've done, that you've got a lot to say, and I think it's all good stuff. So do you mind just telling us a bit about your backstory, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's funny, when I always talk about when I started drinking, I always say like around sort of 12, 13, 14, but when I think about it far back enough, I can remember like even in my single digits, I remember nicking a bottle of gin, me and a few friends from one of my friends' mum's cupboard. We only had a few swigs of it, and I was maybe about 9 years old, and it made me sick that I couldn't drink gin for 20 years after it. But I remember just that fuzzy feeling, you know, and then I was sick in front of my mum and dad, and they thought it was something I ate, obviously, as you would. But, and then later, like, I was always quite a shy kid, you know, very quiet, but I had, you know, I had lots of friends and stuff, and, you know, I played football at a decent level, and we would go on trips to Whitley Bay, Ian, so my first trip away to Whitley Bay was 1983 when I was 12 years old, and there was a football tournament over there. Again, I felt a bit of an odd one out almost, just just because it was very quiet. And then I remember some of the older lads I knew from my hometown were there, and they got some drink, and I think it was vodka and coke, and I had a few swigs of this vodka and coke, and then it was just started running my mouth a bit, you know. But it gave me confidence, and I thought it was great. And it was one of those. I was down at the promenade, Whitley Bay. I had a few sips of this vodka and coke, and I walked straight in front of a car, right? And this car was flying along, and one of the older lads grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and just pulled me back, you know, and literally probably saved my life there. And I remember, Jesus Christ, that was close, you know, but it didn't. It never even stopped me, you know. I just couldn't wait to. Then the next morning, I remember just being, oh God, what was I saying last night? And I remember I was being a bit of a loudmouth, and everyone thinks I'm this quiet little mouse, you know, sort of thing. So it was a lot of sort of embarrassment and sort of anxiety. But then ever since then, I wanted to drink any time I could, you know, just that confidence, the dance and the talk to girls. And I remember my 14th birthday party, me and my mates snuck a load of 2 liter bottles of White Lightning into my house. In this operation involving sleeping bags through the back window, taking these bottles up. And then we snuck off and decided that it was a good idea to pretend my mum and dad were going down the town to drink, but we'd actually snuck into our shed in the back garden and drank. And this is December, it was freezing. But then later on that night, I sort of blacked out, and the lads helped me home. And I remember again, I ran up the stairs and fell flat on my face on the stairs. And then I was sick in a bin in the room we were all staying in, and then but I got away with it. I got away with it for so long until I was 15, and then there was one night me and my friend D, we would usually get like a 6-pack of beer each, so, you know, just and we'd go to this like underage disco. And then there was one night couldn't get any beer, and this was an absolute disaster, because how could you dance and talk to girls if you didn't have any drink before the disco? So then we're on our way, we're walking home, and we met two girls from school. And one of them, her dad owned one of the bars in my hometown. And she said, oh, I've got vodka around the back. So this 3 liter bottle of vodka with Fanta. And of course, I had no idea how much I was drinking. I just wanted to get drunk and drunk. And I just pretty much blacked out after about 45 minutes. And the next thing I know, I'm laying beside my mum and dad's double bed the next morning. And there's a sick bucket beside me. And not only that, but the police had taken me home. So this brought deep shame on my mum and dad, who fancied themselves as two respected people about town. And then I was grounded for, I can't remember what it was, about 3 or 4 months or something. But then same again, went on holiday to Alcudia in Mallorca. Euro 96 was on. So once again, me and my friend D went out, and he was always better at holding his drink. But I just got totally paralytic and came back to the apartment, and my mom was like, where the hell have you been? And I just sat down at the table and spewed all over the table, and then she chased me about the apartment with this brush.
There's a theme developing here now.
So any of those incidents didn't put me off in the slightest. I just wanted to serve my time in my grounded time, and then get back out on the sesh. And then I left Northern Ireland for Durham University in 1999. I was living in Stockton-on-Tees. There was a few campuses down Stockton-on-Tees, so I was living there, and I had no idea what I was letting myself in for. And then I just kept kicking it down the road, the thought of university. And then the next thing, I had to board the ferry, and I was in this country, and my mum and dad were leaving me. And then the tears started streaming down my face, and then my dad started crying his eyes out. And then my mum had to drive home because my dad couldn't. But straight away again, I just opened up a 6-pack of beer. And then I made friends like immediately in Freshers Week, and then the friends I made at university started off like it was quite a big group of us, and then one by one there's the sort of the not so big drinkers sort of fell away, and that left like a hardcore group of six of us, and we were just party animals for like 3 years. Like literally every single night I drank at university. I think you know, Stuart was on a couple of weeks ago talking about university. Like it's quite insidious, like the way it's so celebrated, but at the same time, I was like, it was 3 of the best years, and I absolutely loved it. And you could get away with it when you're that age, you know. And I was a terrible student, got a 2-2 drinker's degree, but I graduated and moved back home to Northern Ireland then. But after university, for me, that's the point where the idea of moderation. There was no going back to that, you know. And I pretty much knew I had an addictive relationship with alcohol. Now I was very into fitness as well, which was probably the thing that stopped me like daily drinking. I'm a bit of a vain twat, so I like to keep myself in good shape. So I always had that fitness side of things as well. So I wouldn't drink every night of the week, but when I did go out on a night out, I would proper, you know, binge drink, proper hammer it, and absolutely no off switch whatsoever.
Yeah, what you just saying there about university and yeah, and Stuart was saying the same, and I was the same. And I was just thinking when you were talking there about do I have any regrets about university? And it would be easy to say, oh yeah, I do. I wish I'd done this, that, and the other. And I don't really, if I'm perfectly honest with you. I had an absolutely great time at university, and I've heard you talk about this before. There's the fun side of drinking, isn't there? If you know what I mean. Then there's the fun with problems, and I'll let you talk about that. But it was very much the sort of fun side of things, and yeah, I had a good time, made some good friends, and you know. I'd say it was a good experience. I can't imagine doing any different, if I'm perfectly honest, which is probably not what I should be saying, but it's how I feel.
No, I'd agree. The only thing I would say is, you know, if you ever get a second shot at this life, I would like to try it sober to see what it would be like, you know, just to see the experience. Now, knowing everything that I know, but how, like you, and I don't regret anything really. There was one incident in the final year at university. I hope my friend Chris doesn't mind me mentioning this, but we all handed in our dissertations, and we're in a pub called the Dubliners in Stockton, and we decided to go home back to the house early. Perfectly honest, we're going to roll a few joints in order and chicken parmo for dinner, you know. But for some reason, Chris nicked the pool cue from the bar and ran across the road, and a car hit him. Right, and the car just hit him straight on, like thrust him about, you know, 10 meters forward, and then both wheels did him over the top of him. And Chris is knee high to a hobbit, like he's tiny. But thankfully, the wheels went over his pelvis area, and it completely shattered his pelvis. But he made a full recovery eventually. But we went back to the house. Then the ambulance came and they took him away, and there was no more we could really do about it. But I remember we went back to the house, and one of the guys, Ben, he had this camcorder because there was no, like, you know, video phones back then. We were all videoing this, and we carried on drinking. And then we were like downing cans of Carling and Guinness and all, and then we ordered in our chicken parmos and rolled our joints and everything. And then we made this video and said, "Oh, it's what he would have wanted. It's what he would have wanted." You know, like celebrating, you know, with drinks. I think back now to that and think it's crazy. It's crazy behavior. Like, and I think like why do that? It's just because the simple fact of the matter is, it was easier not to stop than to just carry on drinking. You know, and that's how much of a hold it had in us. And the next morning, I woke up and I had my car with me, and I got up at 6:30, and I was just like, I can't sleep with this going on. And I drove to Middlesbrough, come into the hospital, but just outside Stockton, and went to see him, and he's there all, you know, bandaged up and his, you know, feet raised off the ground, and he's saying, "I don't want to be here, Bruce." Like, that was my nickname at university, Bruce, for reasons I can't really explain. But I just remember the look on his face, and then I was thinking, like, I must have been so over the limit to get in that car and drive there at 6:30 in the morning, you know. And just all these things looking back now, and you think this is how much of a hold this drug has on us, you know. But anyway, that's just another story about university.
This is the thing as well now. Like, you were young then, and obviously you could say really young and didn't know any better, but the amount of people, even like your age, older, that are still trying to moderate are taking these risks. Because when we're under the influence of alcohol, quite often we do things that we wouldn't usually do, or we black out. And you think about the amount of accidents that happen just because people are under the influence, and yet there's so many people still trying to moderate, still taking that risk.
Yeah, and I don't know. Is it getting better with the youth of today? I don't know if it is. Probably is a bit, you know, with social media and people worrying about getting caught in social media doing these things. But I just think about those days, and then in my 20s, and I was just pretty much blackout drunk the whole of my 20s. Like I say, I was trained so hard, you know, fitness wise, and then because I trained so hard, it wouldn't take me much to get drunk either. Then we get into all these scrapes. Like I'd wake up. Me and my mates owned a house together. It's like one of those American frat houses, and we'd have a Sunday club around at the house where we'd all do a few bets and just get drunk. And I'd pass out because I was so tired. And I'd wake up the next morning and be duct taped to the Sure. Dexter on over my head and, you know, all over my body. You know, just they would have put makeup on me. You know, just happen on a regular basis, because that's what happened to me. I just black out drunk. But
What got you to the point where you sort of thought, you know what, I've had enough of this, and I'm going to start sort of changing my ways? How old were you then, and how did you sort of make the transition, for want of a better word?
as fans of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy will know, Ian, that 42 is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. And I was 42 years old when I decided just to give it a go, almost, because I was a big gambler as well. I took a few months off gambling, and I just I realized, like, Jesus, I'm really enjoying this sort of peace in my mind, not obsessively studying the horse racing and all that. And then I started to ask myself, like, all right, what else have I been getting wrong? I think my mates would all say I've always been a bit different. I've never been afraid to try things and be a bit of an outlier in the group and stuff. It was a boozy weekend away with my brothers and my cousin up in the North Coast, and I was driving to work on the Tuesday. So this is 2 days after. I would usually get a physical hangover, which my hangover is like a lot of vomiting and a lot of nosebleeds. And that was like the physical hangover that I would get on a Sunday and a Monday. And then on the Tuesday, I would get the big mental hangover, the come down. So I was driving to work on the Tuesday, just feeling like absolute dog shit. And I started catastrophizing the Saturday coming. Like, I was thinking, oh, it's my mum's birthday, and I haven't bought her a present yet. And I've got, oh no, my MOT's due on Saturday. Do you know that? And I think catastrophizing these things were the biggest problems in the world. And I was just like, and I was like, these aren't problems. Like, I literally know people with like terminally ill children, and you're catastrophizing these issues. And I just like, right. And I got into work, and I was just like, sat there shivering and anxious and stressed, and every time the phone rang, I shat myself. You know, I just felt like crap. And I said, this is happening too often, because this would happen to me, but maybe 5 times a year, the vomiting, the nosebleeds, and just the mental come down of it. Me and my wife were due to go on holiday then in the summer, and the week before, I bought Catherine Gray's book, The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. I read it on holiday, and immediately from, the first couple of dozen pages, I just got it straight away. And I just, like, she explains, just everything became about the booze, about the drink. And I was thinking about, like, me and holiday, if we were going to the beach, I'd always make sure there was a beach bar, or at least bring a carry out. Or if we're going on one of those nice, catamaran trips, it better be a booze cruise, and it just everything became about the drink. You go to, like, I love my live music. If I go to a concert, it has to be, I can't drive. It has to, you have to be there drinking, be a certain level of drunk before you even get there. Do you enjoy it? And all that's just pure conditioning from when you were young, and a lack of confidence when I was younger. And then just this total misplaced belief that we all have that alcohol gives us this confidence, and actually it does the complete opposite. It drains you of making any natural confidence, or growing any natural confidence of your own. And the worst thing about alcohol is it makes you think that that's the best version of yourself. Now, if you throw in other drugs like cocaine and stuff like that, that's even worse, because that which I've done in the past myself. But that makes you think, like, oh, this is like, you guys know I'm a bit of a karaoke slut, but you should see me on cocaine when I'm doing karaoke. Like, I literally think I'm Roger Daltrey. And then, of course, I can't remember half of it. And you'll see guys walking around, like high-fiving and trying to infiltrate all our groups, and everyone thinks he's a wanker. And then you're thinking, oh, please don't come to our table, please don't come to our table. And then next thing, he's in your face. And then eventually someone will take to him and think, and you go, oh, like, he's on their level. And then the next day he'll wake up thinking, oh, I was life and soul of the party yesterday, but he didn't see the other nine tables and thought he was a wanker, and that's what drinking drugs does to you, really. It gives you this false bravado and confidence that you think you're the dog's balls when you're just an asshole.
How did you find it then? So you spoke about that book. Did you then go on holiday and decide not to drink alcohol, or did
No,
you?
I drank the whole holiday, Kelly. I remember I was sitting at this Port of Colum in Mallorca. Me and my wife were having, it was the last night, and I'd ordered a glass of red wine, because I like a glass of red wine. I used to sit there with my glass of red wine. Even if we're watching the TV, say, and there was half an hour of a show left, and I'd be going to bed in half an hour, and I would look at my glass of red wine and think, oh, Jesus, I'm getting near the bottom of that. Do I have one sip left, or do I have two? And then if Liam, my wife, went to the toilet, I would run into the kitchen, top it up, probably neck a bit myself, and then just pour enough extra in it so she probably couldn't tell when she came back down whether there was more in it or not in it. And just so I could sit down and have my three sips of wine before the show went. Really stupid stuff like that. But by the way, if anyone who does anything like that, you've got an alcohol problem. There's no two ways about it. So, but getting back to the holiday, I was sitting there in Port of Colum restaurant, and those thoughts were going through my mind. And I thought, this could actually be the last drink I ever have. And I remember looking at it, and it says, I swirled the red wine and then I necked it. And then I think I said, right, this is it. I'm done with this. But the challenge was 100 days initially. But I knew, my wife knows what I'm like. I said, once I get an idea in my head like this, like she was like, that's it, you're never drinking again. And I'm like, no, I'm just doing 100 days, see how it feels. She's like, no, I know what you're like, you're never drinking again. And of course she was right. But there you go. And that's after the Catherine Gray book. I just like really immersed myself in the Quitlet stuff, the old Annie Grace. I read Adrian Chiles' book, the book about moderation, twice. I think it's one of the best books about drinking. For me, it just cemented this idea that moderation is just a complete load of bollocks. It doesn't work whatsoever. Like he's clearly a problem drinker and he can't moderate, but he just convinces himself that he can. And it's interesting in the book he has John Robbins, who he introduces as this moderator. And there's an addendum at the back of the book when they say, oh, since the book came out, John's actually gone full scale sober. And then John released his recent book, Thirst. I think you've read it, Kelly, haven't you?
Really good. Yeah, it was really
Yeah,
good. Yeah.
brilliant. It was Lisa in the community recommended it,
Yeah.
and it was brilliant. Really, really loved it. But so I pretty much knew from the start, like this, I knew I have a problem with alcohol. And by the way, everyone thinks my drinking was normal because that's what normal drinking is in Northern Ireland. All my friends, family drank the way I drank. Well, not all of them. Like my wife's very, she hardly drinks, but like all my friends and family pretty much drank the same way. And that's what it's classified as normal drinking. But there's absolutely nothing normal about that level of drinking.
How did you find it in the beginning then? So you can immerse yourself in books and podcasts. Did you find it difficult? Because it sounds like, as you just said there, that everyone around you drinks. So how did you find that? How did you navigate it?
I didn't find it that hard, Kelly, to be honest. I was ready for it, and I just threw myself, like took a complete leap of faith and said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it, balls out of the bathroom, I'm just going for it. And the first week I was at my auntie and uncle's 50th wedding anniversary, and I drove and I just got on the dance floor and danced with everyone else. And it was just like, and again, that probably goes back to Catherine Gray's book. She talks about her dad sober and him dancing at the end of the, just do it, just get up there and do it. And that's what I did, threw myself into that. And then doing sober karaoke for the first time was completely nerve-wracking because I'm terrified of any kind of like public speaking or anything like that. But the karaoke for me was always a big fuck you to that little scared kid I always was, so I did it any chance I got. But doing it sober was completely terrifying. And I remember for some reason I picked the Beautiful South song for whoever, and they list all the names. And I did it, and I got up on the stage, and I didn't know what to do with my left hand. I was like, you don't think about these things when you're drunk. I was like, what do you do with your left hand? And I just stuck it in my pocket there, and I sang a song, and I was shit scared. Like, but there was like a group of hen girls who were like cheering and singing along. So after that, it was just like, well, I've done that once, and so I just got up and just sang three more songs, and then every chance I get, go on the same holiday every year now, and I'm straight up again, and just sing it every chance I get. And sometimes I'm half decent, sometimes I'm absolutely terrible, but I don't. The only time I regret it is if I don't do it. I don't regret getting up there and being terrible. I regret not singing because when you put yourself outside your comfort zone, it builds confidence.
Can I just chip in there now? You said before, you were chatting before about Mondays were, if you'd had a big weekend, Mondays were always just like the pure hangover, if you know what I mean, struggling, feeling sick, whatever it might be, or being sick or whatever. And then Tuesdays was always the sort of like the mental come down day when you were paranoid and anxious, and the phone would ring as you're saying, you're like, oh my God, who's that? What do they want? And like, and then you said a minute ago about if anyone's listening to this and sort of, you know, if anyone's like that, you know, maybe they've got a problem too. And I think I'd agree with all of that. And that was me as well. You know, those 2, 3, 4 day hangovers where I was just on a real low were, they were my signature, if you know what I mean. And it was just getting so tiring and demoralizing. But what would you say to people who are listening to this now, who are thinking, shit, that's me. I'm the guy who's, you know, and again, this was me as well, you know, sneaking drinks in when my wife wasn't looking, going to get another beer, pretending it was the one I had before, you know, and all those sort of silly games. And you think, you have got a drink problem if you're doing stuff like that. But what would you say to people who are still probably kidding themselves that they haven't got a drink problem, even though all these things are all the ticking boxes against all these things?
You have got a problem. That's all there is to it. But what I would say is the issue people have, I think, is fear. People are afraid, like, that because they've built up this identity of themselves over 20, 30 years, and they're afraid. Like, I was afraid at the beginning. I was afraid, like, what will my life be without this? Now, people can be afraid of all sorts of things. I remember Joe Cole. And when England got put out of the World Cup there, I was listening to a podcast, and Joe Cole, they were asking, like, well, what's England's problem? And Joe Cole says, it's a fear of failure. And I was like, but it's not. Like, England fail all the time. England are afraid to succeed. That's because the fear to succeed is the mother of all fears. Like, there's a very famous book by Stephen Pressfield called The War of Art, and he talks about the mother of all fears is the fear that you'll succeed. And it's the fear that if I try this and then this works, I can never go back to this lifestyle. Do you know that's the fear, I think, for a lot of people. In the middle of writing a Substack post this week, it's called Standing on a Whale Fishing for Minnows, right? So, and you get these, like, me and my mates were talking a while back, and one of my mates was like, they had all had a skin full of drinks over the course of a weekend. One of my mates was saying, oh, he doesn't use microwaves anymore because of the risks of cancer. And I never tell anyone you shouldn't drink, or you know, you might want to watch your drinking or anything. I don't do that, right? I write in Substack, and I try to say, right, if anyone's interested in how to change your life and the changes I've made, here it is. If you want to read it, fine. If you don't, also fine. If your alcohol's still serving you, fine. But I said, you do know that alcohol is a class one carcinogen, along with, you know, asbestos and tobacco. Do you know? And I said it, I caught myself, oh, fuck, that sounded a bit wankerish to say it, but it's absolutely true. You know, it's as bad for us as smoking. Like, alcohol is, I don't care what anyone says or what is classified, alcohol is a class A drug. And it's an extremely addictive drug. We've all been taken since we were sort of teens. And anyone that thinks they're not addicted to it, do you know, like, why do you not think you're addicted to this extremely addictive drug you've been taking since you were 13 years old every week? Do you know, how can you not be addicted to it, is what I would say. Do you know, and just on the standing on a whale fishing for minnows. So alcohol is the whale, so everyone wants to make these changes, the protein shakes, the new fitness regimes, which are all great, by the way, meditation, you know, cold water plunges, fine. Do you know, they're only going to improve you sort of 1-2%. But if you quit alcohol, and there's a saying, you know, if you remove alcohol from your life, you know, 50% of your problems will go away. But I think it's more like 70, 80% of your problems. So I was making a list here, right? So your physical health improves, your mental health improves, you finally sleep properly, your fitness takes off, your nutrition improves naturally, your productivity explodes, your relationships improve, your confidence grows, you discover purpose again, you rediscover fun, like real fun, the things that make you fun, that you find fun without having a drink. Consistency becomes your superpower, and you save an absolute fortune in the process. Like, is that not a fair trade-off? Do you know?
Oh, I'm so
No.
glad I asked you. We chatted last week about the you know, we did a podcast on the sort of the you know, when you're sort of sober curious, if you know what I mean, when you're at that sort of contemplation stage. And I really hope that there is people listening to this who are kind of as uncomfortable as you and I were now when we were sneaking back to the fridge or sneaking back to the kitchen to sort of like top the drink up, or when we were sort of like absolutely on tenterhooks about what someone's saying or going to do because we're so, you know, anxious because we're on this massive come down from the beer. I really hope people are listening to this now thinking, shit, that's me. The game's up, if you know what I mean.
I think a lot of people listen to it, and you'll just hear crickets, Ian, because that's the way it goes. Like, a lot of people just want to bury their heads in the sand.
Yeah.
And again, like, if alcohol's still serving you, you crack on. Yeah, if you still think it's still doing something for you, brilliant. Like, but I want to speak to the people who are struggling, the people who think they're just conditioned into this way of life. Talking about, are you addicted to alcohol? One of the biggest tests you can give to someone is say, right, I've got the winning lottery tickets for the Euro Millions this week. There's 132 million. I've got the winning numbers. The only proviso is if you win and you get the 132 million, you can never have another drink again. Because 5 years ago, I wouldn't have taken the money because my thought process would be, well, how the hell am I going to enjoy this money? What's the point in having this money if you can't enjoy it? Because that's the condition of alcohol. That's the hole it has. It makes you believe that you can't enjoy life without it. And it's just years and years of conditioning because your young brain has been wired to think that from the old teenage time, 13, 14. The truth is you've never even given yourself the opportunity to experience it. A few of my friends like tried dry January, and I know a few people succeed, but there's a few of my friends that tried and they tell me, oh, I'm doing dry January, mate. And then 2 weeks in, they'll send a picture of a glass of wine and say, easy peasy, I've done the 2 weeks. Don't need to prove myself anymore. And the fact of it is, you've just proven
Oh,
that
been
you,
there.
like, you're just proven that you're addicted and you can't control it, you know? So, and then there's the other side, sorry, Kelly, the other side that said, you get the people who complete dry January, and then on the 1st of February, just go on a 3 day bender.
I was just going to say on the flip side as well, it's that addictive that it convinces people that are using it as a coping mechanism, that are using it to de-stress or to help them sleep. It convinces them that they're enjoying it. So they're in such, there's so many people, and I was myself, you're in denial or you don't even know, but you think you're having a drink on a Saturday night to enjoy yourself or to go out and socialise, but it's already past the point of actually you're using it because you don't know how to deal with your emotions. You don't know how to sit in those feelings. So there's the both sides of the coin with that.
100%, Kelly, and I know you've talked about Veronica Valli before, and I'm a big fan of her podcast, Overville and stuff as well. And just she always says, we use it to relax, we use it to celebrate, we use it to commiserate. It's just so ingrained in our society, especially in the British and Irish society. There's just always an excuse to drink. Like there's just always, and we just turn to it at every opportunity. And all I want to say to people is, there's a completely different game to play. It's actually much more fun. You might think it's boring, and in a way, parts of it are more boring because there's less chaos. But the thing is, human beings are brilliant at habituating. So if you ever wonder why someone can go to prison like Nelson Mandela and find meaning and purpose in his life, just being treated like crap and eating rubbish to food for 30 years, or someone like Stephen Hawking, paralyzed from the head down and has to speak through a synthesizer, can find a life of meaning, purpose, and humor for the next 50 years. It's because humans habituate, and we all think, what's our life going to be without this? But it becomes normal. You habituate, and then you start to find the simple joys in your life. Like people talk about, the birds and the trees and stuff like that. I mean, for me, it's just like I just love reading, and it's just picking up a book every day. It's just a joy to me. And then just, spend time with my wife and my dogs. Don't get me wrong, I always love spending time with my wife and my dogs, but it's proper quality time now where you feel present, and it's not you're not just waiting to get back from a dog walk so you can crack open a bottle of red wine. Life just gets better.
You spoke there about dry January, and you also mentioned as well that you found it quite easy to remove alcohol when you decided that this is my last drink kind of thing. Was there times before that where you tried to take breaks or you tried to moderate? Was there a period of doing that before you decided to stop?
Not really, Kelly. I'd never done dry January in my life before. So at the but there I was over in Liverpool, Leeds Liverpool game, and I'm a big Liverpool fan, me and two mates, on Halloween in 2022. And again, I was sat in the taxi to the airport on the way back, and I went back to the taxi, and all I wanted to do was be sick, and I just needed to be sick because I'd been on the drink for 2 days. Got to the airport, John Lennon Airport, and I was just in the toilet cubicle, just vomiting, just everything up, and then my nose started bleeding as it usually did. So it was like blood pouring out my nose and vomit pouring out my mouth. And then I walked out I had to wash myself up a bit. And there's an old Scouse guy standing there. He's like, "Oh, dee dee do 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 do," and no idea what he said. I said, "Oh, you should have seen the other guy," because I was just covered in blood. Like this, and this is what alcohol did to me. So the day after, I decided, right, I'm going to try 30 days without alcohol and see how I get on. But I completely white knuckled Achilles. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no support. No, I didn't even listen to podcasts, or didn't read the book. And then when December rolled around, I was straight back on it again. So I didn't achieve anything from that. Probably like a lot of people don't achieve anything from January. But 6 months later, when I tried it again, when I brought the Catherine Gray book, and I was just like, right, I'm going to do this full on and just go for it. And that's when I made that choice, then flip my mind set completely. This is not, use fear so that it pushes you from behind rather than stand in front of you. That way of looking at things. So, and that's the way I've always approached it.
The thing is, me and Ian were speaking about this last week in the podcast as well. About, I mean, you'd said it was you found it quite easy, but by the sounds of it, you'd done a lot of work as well. Like we spoke last week that Ian went full arse in when he decided this was his time as well, and it was like read the books, podcast. Was it really like that for you? Was like a daily work of staying alcohol free?
And don't get me wrong, like there's many ways to skin a cat in this game. Like people have all different ways to do it. For me, like there's that Johan Hari saying, connection is the opposite of addiction. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think connection can be an antidote for addiction, but I think it could just as easily swap education or balance or freedom as the opposite of addictions. Spirituality. Yeah, there's lots of different things you could say is the opposite of addiction, but in my mind, sobriety is the opposite of addiction, and its simplest term, sobriety, just means clear-headed. But as far as tools for sobriety, like reading, I can't recommend enough reading. Reading has been just, and I mean, like actually physically reading a book every day, not an actual book every day, but even if you pick up a book and read 5 to 10 pages a day, if you do that, if you read 5 pages of book every day, you'll read a book a month, you'll be 12 a year at least, probably a few more on holiday. So I read about 30 books a year on average, but, and it's all big shout out to the Alcohol Uncensored Book Club, which is just one of the highlights of my month. I absolutely love it with our lovely host Rebecca and all the guys. So, but yeah, and the book club has really expanded my genre of reading as well, because we read all different. It's not just books and addiction or alcohol. It's books and everything, and that's what sort of, I suppose, switches my mind off a bit. Just the reading and writing as well.
Did you read a lot when you were drinking? Was this a completely new hobby when you stopped drinking?
Well, when I was big into the horse race and stuff, I read the Racing Post every single day. And when I was at school, I bought a tabloid every single morning on my way to school. They was
Not
like,
exactly alcohol uncensored reading,
no,
is it?
no, no,
The
no. It's
Racing
that.
Post.
But it's actually really talented writers in the race, I suppose. But I used to buy a Daily Star on the way to work every morning. I would do the sports crossword in the back, and then read all the crap inside it. And then, but as I got older, then it moved on to like sporting autobiographies and rock star memoirs. And then I went down the whole atheist route, Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, all that stuff. So I read all those books, and then I started to get into more sort of psychology texts and stuff like that, and then now I'll just read absolutely anything, because it's just I just love it.
You talked before, you used the word fear before. There's the fear of not, the fear of who will I be if I don't drink, sort of thing, and the fear of stopping and what will happen, where will my life go, sort of thing. And that's something that definitely was one of my biggest sort of stumbling blocks, is what will I do myself? What will people think of me? What will my character be like? Because I felt like I was defined by drink. And we've met I've met quite a lot of people since I've stopped drinking who are still drinking, who were sort of in that. It's almost like the sort of the departure lounge, if you like, but the planes aren't taking off because they're still there, sort of still drinking, still sort of doing all the things they did. But they know they're kind of coming up against the glass every time, because they know the game's up, but they just can't, because their life's just so welded, isn't it? It's like, I just, again, and I imagine we've got people listening to this, I really hope there is, who are thinking, oh God, it's just touching a nerve with thinking, yeah, I've just got to get over that fear. I've got to get over that fear. I've got to take some first tentative steps. And we talked last week about, just that mindful thing about thinking about just visualizing what it's going to look like beyond. And you're doing a good job now. Thank you very much of showing what the fella was like before and what he was like after. Is there anything else you can say in terms of where your life's gone? You know, obviously you talked about your book, for example, the book that you're working on. You would have to go into great detail on that. But to me, there's so many things you've said to me in the past, things that have just changed massively since you stopped drinking.
I think as far as like my life before I quit drinking and gambling was just living for the weekend to drink and gamble pretty much, you know. And you know, I was a decent husband, a decent friend, a decent son, brother, all that there, but I felt my life lacked purpose, you know. It was just living for the weekend. There's also that side of it, and there's this a shout out to the boys that they think it's all sober, another excellent podcast, Jamie and Tom. They had Foy Vance on, who's a Northern Irish singer-songwriter, and he put it brilliant. Like he's an excellent creative songwriter, but he was on, and he said something that really touched the nerve for me. And he says, if you stay on this road of problem drinking, I'm not saying this verbatim, this has been paraphrasing here, but if you stay on this road for problem drinking, you know exactly what's going to happen in the short term and the long term. You know, you're gonna feel like shit on the Monday, Tuesday. You're gonna In the long term, you're just probably got these all sorts of health complications. You're gonna become more dependent on alcohol. You know, and that's the path to misery, right? If you stay on that path. If you choose the other path, you have absolutely no idea what's on the other side. And for someone like me who's an absolute dopamine junkie, that turns me on. I've written a book, me, an actual fucking book. I've written a book in the 3 years since books are the kind of things you dream about doing when you're drunk, but you start it and then you wake up on a Saturday morning, think, I should have written, no, I'll just stay in bed another hour or whatever. You know, I get up every Saturday morning at 5 o'clock. I get up every morning at 5 o'clock, but every Saturday morning at 5 o'clock, I let the dogs out for a pee, make myself a cup of coffee, and then I sit down and I write for 2. I've written my book pretty much on a Saturday or Sunday morning, and that's my 2 hours on the Saturday morning and the Sunday morning. I write for from 5:30 to 7:30, and that's just like my it's just my time. That's me time, and that's I just absolutely love it, and that's how I've written the book. And that. Like if I was drinking, I would never have the bandwidth, the energy to do that. So yeah.
No, thank you. But it's the fear, isn't it? It's the fear of the unknown, isn't it? It's the fear of just, yeah, it's quite hard, sort of.
I think like I write my weekly Substack blog, which is about get pretty much about giving up drinking and gambling. And it's called Halftime Team Talk for anyone who wants to check it out. Just give it a plug there.
Brilliant.
But I always think it's a bit like, do you remember the film Jerry Maguire with Tom
My
Cruise? Do you
favorite
remember?
films. One of my favorite films, yeah. That and School of Rock. Yeah, go on.
Do you know the bit at the end where he hands out the mission statement and everyone's sort of patting him on the back and say, oh yeah, this is great, Jerry. And then he comes into the office the next day and he gives the speech and he's like, who's coming with me? Who's coming with me? And everything goes, and no one like says anything. And it's like, oh, this is
I'm
embarrassing.
Dorothy.
Yeah, eventually Renny Zellweger says, I will go with you. And he's like, Dorothy boy, thank you. You know, like the thing is, with Substack, like everyone's coming up and he's like, oh, those are great, mate. It's really, really, and they're all holding a pint when they're saying it too. So no one's coming with me here. So you guys are my Dorothy boys. That's you know, so I don't have any other
I'll be your
Dorothy.
Dorothy.
Yes. I don't have Dorothy Boyd's over in this side of the water, so you all you guys in the AU, and then the guys and they think it's also we're Patreon group that I'm with, and there's a gambling one. I'm a problem gambling. Apart from that, like I'm not on social media, like any sort of big social media, like Facebook or Instagram or anything like that. But yeah, you guys are my Dorothy Boyd's.
It's the whole denial thing as well, isn't it? It's like it's. And it's not a that's not a criticism to anyone that's in denial, because we've all been there. It's just such an addictive substance and it's so readily available and pushed to us in society that it's so difficult to actually realize that you are in denial. Like I hear you speaking, Niall, about obviously when you were younger and you seemed as if you really liked to have a drink from like a really young age. And I just wonder like how obviously you're confident speaking about the fact that it was a problem for you, but it takes time to get that honest, I think, is what I'm trying to say. Like when you first remove alcohol from your life, it's just like, oh, I'm taking a break because it's making me feel rubbish or because of this. And it's not until you step away a little bit and you start doing some work and reading the books and listening to the podcast, you start getting honest with yourself and thinking, actually, this has been a bit of a problem for longer than I've actually realized.
You can't spell denial without Niall, Kelly, you know. So I had an issue with it, but like I say, and I have to say, like it was scary for me. Like I remember that first morning, I got up like in Mallorca before we got picked up. Like I went and sat in the rocks. I was listening to a song called "Sweet Thing" by the Waterboys, one of my favorite songs. And Mike Scott, the lead singer of the Waterboys, he like gave up drinking when he was 1991, I think. So he's a long, long time sober. And there's a bit where he was this the song "Blackbird" by the Beatles, and it's like, all your life you were waiting for this moment to arrive. All your life you're waiting for this moment to be free. You know, it's Paul McCartney's lyrics, but they put it into their song as well. And it's and that I just kept repeating that those lyrics to myself. All your life you've waited for this moment to be free. And it's a and I just thought, right, I have to do this, and I gotta just do it, dive in both feet.
Yeah,
And that's
that's
what I've
pretty
done.
good. Yeah. You've mentioned some classic there's now I think about it, like you mentioned a couple of really good well, you mentioned Adrian Childs, and I'm not I remember when I first was this is when I was at the contemplation stage, I remember reading Adrian Charles's book, and oh, his book was doing it was the program he did on TV, wasn't it? Drinkers Like Us, I think it was called something
Yeah.
like that, and it was like, and it was brilliant because for the first time ever, somebody was talking about their problem with drinking. It was the first one I'd ever really come across, and it was a guy who I knew, you know, and respected, and like, and I remember chatting to my friend about it, and really getting quite, you know, engrossed and excited that somebody else actually. Because you are scared to move away from the crowd, aren't you? He's totally scared to move away. So this guy was talking about it. Anyway, and then I think he then did a follow-up, didn't he, where I think he was doing his, you know, mindset, you know, sort of moderation bit and stuff. He's thought he's really cashed in on his sort of success, but he's totally gone about it the wrong way. So sorry, Adrian, if you're listening. I don't imagine you are, but if you are, I'm really sorry. But then you also mentioned Soberful as well. And sober and Kelly and I talked about this. You put some links in the group, Kelly, didn't you, from the Soberful
Yeah.
podcast? That was the other one, though, Veronica and Chip, who you mentioned before. They were brilliant. And again, it was like, hallelujah, there's people speaking about something I think. And this is probably going back 8 years now, I think about it, because I was at that contemplation stage for a long time. There are so many good podcasts, and there's so much more material out there now, isn't there, that you can get your teeth into.
Yeah, it's, you know, fair play to anyone who did it back in the day, you know, without AA or, you know, without, because there is a lot of tools available now, you know, the resources, the podcasts, the communities, the books. And you have Veronica Valley and Chip Summers yet. I mean, I just love Veronica. I could listen to her all day. She's just the she just says it as it is, and there's just nothing. When you listen to her speak, it's just nothing you can argue with. She just nails it, you know. So I've a lot of time for the pair of them, but yeah,
I listened to one of the podcasts the other day and I thought it was great. They spoke about a little bit of water, so just a little thin bit of water and loads of sharks in the water. And to get to the fun side of the island and get a drink and enjoy yourself with your friends, you need to cross the water, you need to swim with the sharks. And it's like how many people would do it? Like so many people can get across and so many people can't. So there's guaranteed some people can get to safety, but others can't. And like no one's going to go in the shark waters, but yet so many people just keep trying moderation, even though they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know if it's going to be a blackout or if they're going to miss their work or if they're going to be hungover or upset a family member. They just take the chance anyway. And I just thought that was a really good analogy. I think the two of them are great.
And the other side of that is Kelly Veronica added a bit on this. You do know there's a boat over here. You can just get the boat over. You don't have to go through the sharks. Just take the boat over with us, and then you'll get to the other end. You know, so I thought that was excellent.
There's some really good stuff there.
Yeah, good stuff. We're gonna have to go because again, I've given up all the trade secrecy, Kenny. But something's just chat flashed up on my screen saying evening chat with Neil in 4 minutes. We need to get off so Neil can get on and do his Zoom hosting in
I've
the
got one
company.
last question though before we go. So now you're 3 years in and you're clearly really strong in your sobriety. And you were part of Over the Influence and then you've joined Alcohol Uncensored. What does community mean to you in your sobriety? What do you get from it?
Well, like I said earlier, Kelly, you guys are my Dorothy boys because I sing about the joys of sobriety over here, but I don't have anyone close. Like all my friends, and I know there's some of my friends, like lots of my friends, they tell me these are great, and a lot of them stay silent. Like a lot of them just it's just crickets, and you just it's like, oh, you think, oh, what's this wanker talking about now? Do you know? But you guys in the community, you know, this. Like the book club and speaking. I've made some great friends, like our mutual friend Matt Hard, Ian. You know, I got a voice note Matt pretty much every week, and it's just good fun. You know, it's when I first joined, you know, back in OTI, I thought these are going to be a bunch of boring bastards, you know, but it's not. It's people exactly the same as me who do just good fun people here. Just get sick of feeling like shit. So and I mean, you meet up, it's just. It's been too long since I've met up with you guys. I haven't even met you in person yet before I met that Kelly and Snowden, but so I'll have to rectify that. But you just meet up and it's the conversation and the crack and it's just brilliant. It's just and the last 3 years, like if university were the most fun 3 years of my life, I think the last 3 years have been the best 3 years of my life. Just in on the contentment scale, just this has been brilliant. So yeah.
Amazing. Oh, good stuff, good stuff. So just tell us quickly what your book's called, Neil. You got your book coming out now. So your book coming out in January, I think it is.
Yeah, it's my gambling addiction memoir called I've Got a Tip, Lads, Winning Gamblers Lose Too. And it's about I was an online tipster for about 10 years, and I was financially successful. I made a profit for pretty much between 10 and 15 years of gambling and horse races, but it completely consumed my life. So there's a lot of books in gambling addiction, but there's not one about how it consumes you. Even if you win, you'll lose. And so that's what the book's about. It's a lighthearted read, but it's the thing I'm most proud of in my life that I've done for myself. I put my heart and my soul into it, and I know it's a good book. I just hope people read it.
Good on you, mate. And if people want to check out your Substack, how do they do that?
Yeah, that's it. There's as far as I know, there's only one Niall Davison. So if you type in Google my name, it should come up, Niall Davison. It's halftime team talk. Halftime refers to midlife, so it's was it calling time and bets and booze, bets and bad habits for those curious about the path less chosen in the second half of life. So that's what the Substack's about.
Brilliant. And we, Kelly, we need more Dorothy Boyds, don't we? So
We do.
how do we attract more Dorothy Boyds? What if Dorothy Boyd's out there and she's interested, how does she get in touch with us?
You can reach us on team@alcoholuncensored.co.uk and also the website, or you can get us on socials as well. If you get any questions about the community or you want to give it a go before you sign up and want to try a Zoom, absolutely more than welcome to do that as well. So just get in touch with us.
If you are sitting on the fence, then you are just like I was, you know, listening to Sobercop back in the day and watching Adrian Charles on TV, and just it's like a dagger to the heart, isn't it? It's like the game's up, but you're just scared and worried about what you do. Just give us a go. We're not a bunch of nutters. Niall's just said that. We are normal people. We just love the benefits of what happens when you stop drinking. So don't be scared, give it a go. Right, we better get off. Niall, thank you very much indeed. Really
Thanks for that,
appreciate
guys.
it.
Oh, it's
Thanks
always a
so much
pleasure.
now.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Thank you.